Hello, my name is Dr. Vanessa Kimball, and I am a baker. But I'm also someone who has studied and researched the impact of bread on our health for many years. I run the Sourdough School in Northamptonshire, and my specialism is bread and the gut microbiome and the impact on our mental health. But I'm also trained as a nutrigenetic practitioner, meaning I look at the way that bread impacts people according to their genetics. It helps me to personalise bread. And in this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to someone who I hope you are going to find as interesting as I did. What I'd love is for you to listen and think about the bread that you bake, eat, and share with your family. Because bread is a staple, it's our most basic food, and I believe it is the foundation to good health. Today, I've got a guest joining me, Venetia Mitchell. I've known Venetia for many years, and she is a nutritionist, and she practices functional medicine, a functional approach to nutrition. And we hear this word thrown around a lot, functional. So I'm going to be asking Venetia about what functional medicine is. And she's just logging in. Venetia works at Peach, which is a small company that deals mainly, but not only, with women's health. Hello, I'm just introducing you.
Hello, good to see you.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Really great, lovely to be here. So thank you for having me.
Well, you know this place very well. So.
I do. I always want to be there in person.
It's lovely. I'm about to put some bread in the oven as soon as this podcast is done. I've got some prescription bread going in the oven, so it's fantastic. Venetia, just explaining, we've got about 45 minutes to have a conversation around something, but I think we hear this word functional medicine banded around. Now, before we start talking about functional medicine, can we talk about you for a minute and ask, how did you get to be practicing functional medicine, functional nutrition? Where did that come from? Did you wake up one day as a child, or did it hit you in midlife? Where were you at?
Yeah, there's definitely an evolution to that. Never thought. I think the functional movement was not really around when I was born. I loved biology at school. I then did a physiology degree. And after that, confidence didn't allow me to pursue what I really wanted. My mother had really pursued me with looking after my health via the complementary medicine route. So often I would be seeing all sorts of different health professionals around that, but not necessarily the GP. And I think that really, I wanted to take my physiology degree in that direction, but I was very uncertain and it was all quite new back in the day. So I started short courses whilst doing a normal corporate role. And the short courses led me to the passion of the science was really mainly in the nutrition. And I was really much more keen on that. So I knew that I'd have to give up my lovely high-paid corporate role and take a plunge. And thankfully, but it took me a while to get the courage to do that. And thankfully I did. And I took a master's in personalized nutrition from CNELM in Wokingham, Buckinghamshire. And that was affiliated with the University of Middlesex. And it was fantastic.
Middlesex.
Yes, exactly.
A really good health department.
Yeah, exactly. And it was fantastic. It was just a lovely journey. It was hard work, but eventually, you know, you do it in line with obviously a practice diploma, which is really important. And now you then kind of qualify and you're registered with Your aim is to be registered with the British Association of Nutritional Therapists, BANT, and that then also you link in with the CNHC, which protects the public.
So yeah, I'm registered with BANT, and it's really important
Yeah,
to,
and
because anyone can call themselves a nutritionist, right? You can literally be, you can be not a nutritionist on Monday, and by Thursday you could do a 2 or 3 day course or a 2 or 3 hour course and call yourself a nutritionist. There's no regulation around it, which makes it quite interesting because
Yeah.
there's a lot of politics in that area, which we
It's
probably oughtn't go into right now.
no, it's a real battle actually. And I think BANT have been a lot better at really tightening up things. And we all have to have a degree now. You need a degree, and that's that the degree in something around the nutritional space. So it is much better. And my particular degree was very much based on this functional model. Our training was using that model. So I'm excited to tell you, because I think I often start my, in clinical practice, I often have to explain to clients, most of my clients haven't heard of this functional medicine word. And so yeah, I'm delighted to kind of explain a bit more about the journey of that. But yeah, I found myself doing a course, having not heard about functional medicine. Suddenly my nutritional therapy was leading me into this approach, and because of this forward thinking college actually. And it was fantastic.
So we use the term functional quite often in the approach of baking as lifestyle medicine to explain a slightly different approach to the way that we look at things. Lifestyle medicine obviously is an evidence-based protocol. It has a definition. There's a British Institute of Lifestyle Medicine, but it's still different from functional medicine. So I'm going to put you on the spot today because I know you're brilliant at this. So, and you practice this day in, day out. So, as a health professional, what does functional mean?
It's integrative. So if you think about integration of everything in health life, so your body has many different systems, and traditionally in conventional medicine, they're looking at those systems individually. So you might go to a gastro for your gut. You then go to a, any other respiratory specialist for your, and that's an amazing model in lots of ways, and of course, but the functional is looking at those systems as sort of cogs that are all flowing together.
It's almost like a back of a Victorian pocket watch where each cog is integrated with the next cog and they all interact together to make the whole watch work.
That's exactly it. And we are understanding, we are trained to understand the mechanisms that link these areas of the body. And that's it really in its entirety. I mean, there's a bit more to it as well. I think you're looking at the whole person, and you're also looking at their integration with their environment. Who are the, what are their relationships? What's their spirituality? Where are they living? Are they in the middle of a kind of farm, or are they in the middle of a city? And all of this can really allow us as health professionals to understand where do we need to prioritize our intervention
Where is
to
the
rebalance.
difference? Where's the difference then between functional medicine and lifestyle medicine? There's a sort of clinical line, isn't there, where you kind of go slightly. So lifestyle medicine is lifestyle, but functional will take into account all of these things and then be looking at the actual those tools for prevention, all of those systems as a medical side as well. So it's kind of like I'm gonna call it a level up from lifestyle medicine to so people,
many of the people that listen to my work and listen to what we do are a bit like me, got maybe a grade C in GCSE chemistry, and I sat at the back gasping for air because my biology teacher didn't wear deodorant, and I couldn't concentrate on anything scientific at school. I was the bad, naughty, disruptive child who wouldn't, who was, absolutely needed to sit as close as I could to the wheel. I was like a dog, when you put a dog in the car, and I would have my head out the window during my GCSE years. So on that basis, and many of the bakers and the students who I teach are a little bit afraid of sometimes when you say something like functional medicine, they're like, "Oh, missus, not for me." And I'm like, "Hang on, this is for everyone. Yes, often it's doctors and people who are, we look and they say, oh, quite academic, and it sounds very scary, but actually it's quite accessible, and it generally means that we're looking at how you live, how you're leading your life, where you're living, all of those things. And then on top of that, you kind of start looking at the medical aspect of that and how that integrates with their life.
Yeah, can I? I'd love to tell you a bit about the history of
Okay, I'm
the
listening.
functional medicine. You know,
Okay.
that might help answer that, and it's fascinating what
Okay.
you said. But essentially, it was a chap called Jeff Bland and other colleagues who originally came up with this concept, and they are based in the US. They are medical doctors in the US. And they realized that this approach through he was it was actually him and his wife, and they realized that there was a missing piece in this puzzle with the doctors, and so he actually with lots of talks and moving around the US with his colleagues, he just he, they came up with this model and called functional medicine. And it's essentially so the GPs are given tools to use in their practice that allow them to address these lifestyle medicine approaches. And that was back in the 80s.
And yet, in so many ways, Venetia, they're not addressing them in the NHS using functional medicine. It seems to have been divided between functional seems to be something that is almost alternative in some odd way. Do you see? Yeah.
And actually, that's not what alternative is definitely not what it should be. It's complementary. And
Yeah.
actually, it was really interesting because Jeff came over to the UK and he met Prince Charles. And most of us know that Prince Charles is very much behind the complementary medicine route. And Jeff came back and created this magazine under the By the way, the Institute of Functional Medicine, which he'd created, called Complementary Medicine, because it was kind of driving that complement movement that, yes, these tools for nutrition, lifestyle, all of this, and spirituality could be integrated into the GP's working day, trying to get them to beef out and use these approaches.
It's so interesting as well, Venetia, because when we look at baking as lifestyle medicine as a functional approach, if we look at, so you said systems, and if so, when I'm discussing this with students here, I will explain that, one of the systems that can be highly impactful on health that we can do a lot about is actually in working around hormones, blood sugar regulation, the endocrine system, but also in how that impacts cortisol and then sleep, and it rocks all the way up into sleep and then the following day appetite. I can start with a really simple question, and someone will say something quite, innocuous about why is mixing so, why does mixing help your health? And suddenly I've gone all the way through about three or four of the body systems to like, oh, back to the nutrition and the sort of and the support from the zinc, and we can go back there. And suddenly it's like a firework going off in my head, and I'm like, oh, I've spent 20 minutes on essentially explaining the functional systems integration all through the way that you've got your hands in the flour and the dough. And so actually it's fascinating the way you do that, but you also test, don't you? I mean, when you're a working functional practitioner, so I'm teaching baking as lifestyle medicine, I do use a couple of like niche genetics, obviously, is for me functional. But what can you expect from a working functional practitioner? What's that? You know, what do you do? Because you do a lot more different things to me, like the Dutch test. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think the testing is interesting. I mean, we give a lot more time to start with. We have to gather a lot from the client. And that allows us, like you were just saying, to kind of bring all these cogs of the wheels together. And then we form a kind of matrix. We've got these tools that the Institute of Functional Medicine provide us with. As at Peach Health, we're members of the Institute of Functional Medicine. And you use those tools to find the mechanisms that you really believe you should target in that personal, you know, really personalized. And that's the key underneath functional, is that the interventions and the decisions that you take for that client are personalized, because you have done what you just said. You know, you've thought about their hormones, then you've realized that maybe it's a blood sugar thing, and then actually is cortisol playing a picture. So then you're going to make a decision about what investigations you might need, and sadly in the UK it's tricky, because our investigations are very, you know, they're hugely comprehensive and far more than the general NHS thing. So, for example, a stool test at the NHS might very much specifically target various parasites if someone's got a serious gut, you know, activation symptoms going on. But we have this completely extreme comprehensive gut test, which really measures a lot more. Parasitology, pathogens, all sorts, and inflammatory markers and things, and that's only in the US. But then there's the hormone, the endocrine picture, is you know, the traditional way, obviously measuring through blood is a real snapshot, and the hormones are moving all the time.
I mean, you literally from morning to evening, there's a graph, isn't there? I remember taking one of the tests and having to. I'm quite sure I was having to pee in a pot every so many hours. I recall a long time ago, but yeah. There wasn't one test. I was taking them throughout 24 hours.
Yeah, and that's a really the we can therefore gain, and you're doing it via the urine in that case.
Okay, so my recollection is good. It's a long time ago, but carry on.
The Dutch test, and it's a company called Precision Labs, and they measure the because we get the urine, we can understand the metabolites of these hormones and where they stand in the picture. So you get this incredible result of all of these different metabolites, and it's quite complicated when you go into it, but the metabolites of the hormones are really important, because estrogen metabolizes in three different ways.
In the gut.
And then you've got, well, yes, exactly, and then you need to consider. And of course, the metabolism is determined by the liver, the gut, all of this. Sort of,
and that determines how to process your estrogen as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And where it's going, and you'll have an impact on your testosterone and you know. And then I think this is quite interesting, just what you've just said there alone. Zinc is one of the blockers for me, estrogen of testosterone. It stops me from turning my testosterone into estrogen.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I haven't. So as a practicing on myself, I have. Just going to tell my husband. Yes, you can. He's coming for something. What's doing?
Sad stuff.
So it's real life here. So you said at the beginning of the call, you look well, Vanessa. And actually, one of the things I've really concentrated on having, and actually, you know, pushed quite hard, is actually my natural levels of zinc through seeds and the bread. I've really put that in, and it's changed. You're not gonna believe this. My bread has changed my cognitive function because I'm able to use my testosterone now. And I was like, wow, my brain's functioning again. And instead of increasing my hormones more because I'm on HRT, I was like, oh, hang on a second. Lift up my zinc. Here's my little personalized functional bit. And I've been doing that for about, I think, about 3 months now. And suddenly I was like, oh, my brain is back. I'm back.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And that's exactly a brilliant example of this, because they're all of these pathways are, you know, the cofactors are nutrients.
Yeah, I know, cofactors. Who knew? Not just supplements, cofactors.
Yeah, and they are absolutely things that we can get from our food. And there are lots of things perhaps that we're eating in this modern day that are actually really inhibiting these pathways as well. And maybe inhibition is something we want, but it's a really fine line.
So just going back to anyone who's listening, who's sitting there thinking, what earth is a cofactor?
Oh, yes.
So cofactor is one thing that goes with another thing that makes it happen. So a really good example of that would be maybe vitamin D. When you take vitamin D, having vitamin K is a cofactor in the way you process it, and it stops calcification from your vitamin D. So when you've got, in real life, that would be sunshine and greens. But if you have to take a supplement, you look for, you know, one would look for vitamin D and vitamin K because they go together. And that means cofactor is that they kind of like, they kind of need each other, like, you know, Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire would have been a pair of cofactors to dance together, that kind of thing. So that's really important. Yeah, you get that in your food naturally, don't you? Exactly.
Yeah, you do. And that's why, you know, I think you use genetic reports a lot. And we do in functional medicine as well, because in functional nutrition, as I practice, really. But it's those genes, you know, our genes do not determine our destiny.
No, they're kind of markers of where you might go and what you might be dealing with.
Exactly. And then if you understand them, you know, you can then understand through support of a health professional to understand what are the nutrients that actually are going to help you overcome that genetic.
For me, I see it as pure preventative. It's prevention strategy, mm-hmm. preventative medicine. So, okay. So what kind of conditions do you see getting the best outcomes from a functional medicine approach?
All of them.
Okay. Go on.
I mean we've just explained a bit about, you've just given a lovely example about hormones. I think thyroid health is just a prime example of a system in the body that is just utterly poked by everything else. So
very complex, actually. I've looked at it a few times recently, especially getting iodine and seaweed into bread. But it's actually not approaching it functionally, I think, really can do more harm than good.
This is it. And actually, sadly, the conventional approach with the thyroid is pretty limited. And because of the lack of studies, they are really limited in the medications that they're using. And for some of the population, the main medication they're using is fine. It does its job. But for others, they actually need a broader approach. And there are other medications out there, but here in the UK, we're not across it yet.
Not ask anyone to stop the thyroid medication or do it, because you would need to do this with your GP. We don't separate ourselves from GPs and with healthcare practitioners. You work with them. But these studies that you said, there are very few studies. Just to put a little question to you, I'm going off track, but is this because there are so few studies on women that we don't have this kind of data on, say, something like thyroid?
Potentially, definitely. And I think it's sadly just a case of the fact that change is difficult and they haven't really dug into what the studies, you know, there are studies there. And I'm sure if I'm right in saying the FDA, you know, in the US, they've signed off on other medications that actually support other hormones within the thyroid to help people, and they seem to think that's adequate. But I think it changes harder over here. You know, we're slower and we haven't got there. But I don't know your question about women for sure. And I do see that more clearly in other studies such as fasting. You know, there are all these studies on fasting in men, and
Yeah.
you suddenly realize that there are none in women. The ones that have been in women, it's not the best thing to do. And that's quite sort of interesting and just
Yeah,
something to
genetically doesn't
well.
suit everyone. I'm
No.
afraid me fasting is a no. I have a slow comps. It increases my cortisol. And
Yeah.
weirdly, when I start fasting, if I don't handle myself properly, rather than lose weight, I put weight on and I'm like, what just
Yeah.
happened? But my cortisol's through the roof because that funnel. So actually, I'm a real no for fat. So do short fasts, long fasts are a complete no for me.
Yeah, so that's a kind of a thing about the studies there. I think we were going back to the where were we before that? Because we were thinking about the areas and the thyroid health exactly. So thyroid is absolutely affected by toxins, by infections that we have, by stress. By any sort of inflammatory, when I mean inflammatory, the immune system going on fire a bit. And all of those things impede the thyroid function. And thyroid is our master hormonal regulator. You know, it determines our body temperature. It controls our body temperature and it determines energy. And it can impact the gut in terms of the motility, but then again, the thyroid is just governed by so much underneath. And that adrenal stress picture plays a huge part. But then also, it needs so many nutrients. And the key nutrients are sort of zinc, selenium, that, you know, that they're pretty key. But there are many others. You know, you need the Bs, you need the iron to actually get the flow of the hormones working, and it's a feedback system. It tells the brain when it's had enough hormone, and then the brain calms down. And yeah, sadly, the measurement and actually going back to testing, the testing approach in the NHS for the thyroid is pretty limited, and that means that there are probably more people out there that are suffering with thyroid issues that haven't been
Thanks.
on. Because yeah, they're only measuring a couple, if not just one of the hormones, and there are a few more.
So I'm always fascinated by the thyroid being tested because I could have single-handedly financed the thyroid testing industry. Every time I went to the doctor to say I couldn't lose weight, he did a thyroid test. I'm talking probably, 2 dozen thyroid tests in my life. And he would always come back and go, you're just on the edge of the NHS, I'd be within the NHS guidelines. But this is really interesting because I think a lot of women are, I would say for me, potentially slightly underactive. But actually, I looking back now when I was going there, I think actually in some ways, I think my blood sugars were slightly out of control when I was going there. I think at the time I was probably eating more refined carbohydrates, a lot more at the time. And of course, what I see here is when I have people who I know have got sort of thyroid issues, the immediate reaction is to take them off gluten. And the answer is actually yes. And I say that. lowering inflammation is part of that functional approach. And then, of course, what we'll do is and because we're on a podcast, I won't swear too much, but we ferment the fat a bit. So you basically acidify and use a proteolytic activity to neutralize that. But actually, to know and to work with people, I can't diagnose that. So often I won't know if someone has even got that. So if I'm listening to someone, and thinking, okay, I've got some red flags here, my immediate reaction is to actually send them to you, Venetia. You can actually go and have a really deep dive into it.
Yeah,
so I recommend you, you know, if you know, to anyone who's listening today, Venetia's someone who I would go to when I need things. And obviously, what do you do then? If just taking that as an example, functionally, what do you do that no one else can? What's that? I know what I can do because I know it first. I can't diagnose it. I'm incapable of diagnosing.
And neither can I, to be clear. I'm definitely, as a nutritional therapist, we cannot diagnose in any form.
But you can see things that would indicate, therefore, you can ask them to go back to GP for further tests or...
Exactly. We would communicate with their GP. And for sure. And that is the thing. And it's actually hopefully helpful for their GP. We may have, if depending on what their budget is, because, you know, as I was mentioned earlier, you know, it's easy in the US to get all these amazing tests that they've got there that they do brilliantly at, but they're very expensive and they get them often under their insurance. Whereas over here, we have to do it all privately. So it is difficult, but if we do have the opportunity to dig a bit deeper and do some more of these functional tests, which something like a thyroid panel, it actually doesn't have to cost a huge amount of money. You know, there are minimal finger prick ones. I mean, we're not always sure that the finger prick are completely accurate, but at least it can give us more of an idea of a snapshot in time of where that person is. And with this, but it's all, I would, we are trained to take those tests and really dig into them as individuals. What are their symptoms? And does that marry to the bloods? Because we're not trusting blood testing all the time. You know, that's important not to rely on it. It's to really understand the client. And once we can do that and we interpret the testing, we are looking at these mechanisms again and understanding where the imbalance is. And then, you know, with the perhaps the help of the GP, if they need that further support medically, then that's their realm. But for us, we will look at that lifestyle, nutrition, environmental, whatever, and we will prioritize suggestions that these clients can make. And really in line with compassion and doing it slowly, you know, it can be so overwhelming. And, you know, as a practitioner, I find it overwhelming when I've got all of this information and all of these symptoms and where are we going to start? But that's my job and my tools that I've got from the Institute of Functional Medicine.
And often people come to you, Venetia, when they're already at the end of their tether. So a typical example for, I mean, as an example, is someone who may be undiagnosed with ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people kind of know, or they may have had a diagnosis. I mean, my diagnosis was actually feels like a long, long time ago now. And I was going to say, before it became trendy, I was like, everyone else has got it now. I said, oh, okay. I'm actually ADHD, which is obviously makes sense. More sense. For those of you who don't know, it's a term, it's not medical, but it's both autism and ADHD. They kind of balance each other out in a weird kind of way. I think I look a lot more normal than I really am until you get to know me.
That's the normal.
And then the ADHD in me always wants to interrupt, and I have to I try to put my hand over my mouth, and people are like, "Wake up, your mouth," because I'm trying not to interrupt someone. It's just all about myself. So if I came to you for ADHD, what's your approach then? Because obviously I do a lot. My specialism is probably ADHD.
I think
we love each other.
Yeah, and you know what? I'd ignore your diagnosis, really. I'd try and put that to the back of my mind. I honestly would. I'd look at your symptoms. I'd really, really take account of what your symptoms are. We then, you know, as I've said earlier, we gather all this information about your health history, your environment, where you've lived, what stress you're under, and we piece together that and we understand what are the... is your problem, because is your symptoms, you're not your problem at all, because it's not necessarily like that, but it's are the symptoms that are bothering you most, and what are your goals and where do you want to get to, and where is it in the brain chemistry, or where is it in the physiological systems that need the addressing the most. And often with, you know, I've previously worked in a clinic where we have seen many children who are struggling, and they may or may not have been diagnosed, but it's very common that they struggle with detoxification, actually. And that's very interesting because one of the main detoxification pathways, something called methylation, which is a cycle that happens throughout our body, is also responsible for detoxifying, you know, things like estrogen, our hormone, and also histamine. And these clients have often got problems with that methylation cycle, and that can lead to sort of the perhaps the lower mood or the anxiety that sometimes can be related, or the problems concentrating. You know, that can be impactful, and that methylation cycle is completely governed by your genes are underlying it, but your intake of protein, and your balance of some key main nutrients, which are absolutely vital. And often then when you may be able to look at their bloods, you can see that they're deficient in some of those nutrients. And you know, you're looking more widely as well, but you're working on those sorts of pathways and general nutrient balance as well.
It's very interesting, because part of my doctorate was in this. I mean, this is my sort of bread and butter, if you like. But some of the key areas that you've just touched on, especially with some of those nutrients that are needed during methylation, have been removed from our bread round about between the fermentation and the reduction of diversity. And I've got to tell you this, even though we're technically speaking, I can't tell you any more details about it, but we're currently underway with a study at King's College London. It's a dietary intervention. We've got a month on one of my prescription breads and a month on a very well-known sliced white, the one that's most available in our supermarkets. And I got a message from the person running the study. I'm supervising it and obviously provide the bread. And she said, oh, I've got some preliminary data back. She said, we've got mood scores of moderate depression. She said, then they've eaten your bread and it's gone down to mild. She said, we've gone back to the supermarket sliced, and they've shot straight back up to what they call the moderate depression that they're dealing with. And that is right on the, that's happened like this last week. And absolutely phenomenal to see. And of course, one half of me is thinking, yay! And then the other half is like, well, yes, because I've been doing this for absolutely years and years. And I've been saying, this is what happens. And of course, I mean, in my own dietary intervention studies in my doctorate showed that. But I absolutely know, without a shadow of a doubt, Venetia, that it's that the methylation,
wow,
is absolutely because of the bioavailability of those key nutrients and all of, and blood sugar regulation, all of that, but especially methylation, is satisfied by this. And our modern food isn't providing what we need, is it? I mean, if you literally go and eat that ultra-processed food, you are literally doing yourself in. You can't, and you call it functional medicine, but the point being, you cannot function if you eat badly. Right. So functional medicine is almost putting the function back in at that ground level. It's quite amazing. Sorry, I'll shut up.
It's absolutely considering the function of each single mechanism, and yeah, you know, and there's so many, but that's it. And it's so sad that we are fighting against, you know, we're in a society where all of this fast food, processed food is absolutely smack in front of us. And it's really difficult. And, you know, this is why it's just so amazing, your school in particular, because it's just so brilliant. I've had the pleasure working with you and really digging into it. But the bioavailability of those nutrients has totally transformed with your processing of how you do it. But then there's also that whole other side to, yeah, okay, not all clients are going to start making bread. But
no, and that's... And that's tough, and I'm working on that right now. I can't tell you to. I'll tell you after the podcast. I'm underway with something.
But I think, you know, even if they just gave it a go, if they needed, often we're talking to clients about what more would they like to do. You know, some of them may not be completely happy with their life. You know, they're lacking a few hobbies, and something like starting to try and bake some bread is like such a great prescription.
For some people, it's an absolute lifesaver.
And it's not just about it is about the bioavailability of nutrients, but then there's also that you're not using yeast, obviously, you're using this natural process, but also the whole spiritual, you know, the kneading of the bread, and all of that is meditation. And suddenly they're not looking at their phones, they're actually really concentrating on this incredible relationship with their dough. And it's just, that is in itself, you know, so often in clinic, you know, we can't get through even the best diet, often can't get there because we've got a sort of past something that's niggling in our minds. And, you know, we're really unhappy with that. And we have to encourage the clients to, you know, we'll be referring or we'll be help doing what we can do to try and go through those sort of psychological barriers and really work things out. But things like those hobbies of making bread is just so
yeah, there are certain things Finnish people can't change. They can't, some boys can't change their job, they can't change the fact they're married to someone they can't stand the sight of. They're going to a job that they're like, oh, I'd rather chew my own arm off than go to work today. But then they rock this absolutely like kick-ass bread out of the oven, and they're like, you know, you open the oven door, that smell, you know, the clouds part, the sunbeams come through, you know, the angels, they go, oh, and you're like, look at that. That is like ding on ding dong. It doesn't, none of the rest of it matters because you're a baker and you're like, oh yeah. this is it. And I honestly, there's nothing, I mean there's nothing that I, even now I've been doing this, oh my god, I'm going into my 40th year of doing this, and I just never, even from being a little girl in France, never, ever, ever not got excited. Even this afternoon, I'd be like, oh, what am I getting out of the oven? I know what I'm getting out of the oven is bread, but I mean, that never fails. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. And that is a really exciting study.
This study, they're not making the bread, they've just been given it, so it's me doing the baking. Yeah. So this is what's cool, because do you remember the dietary intervention studies? But they made the bread, whereas this time
they're not making it.
Yeah. So I can actually separate some of it and say, actually it is, so this is really interesting.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's, you know, it's some people for their, it takes a while to change their habits, and you know, they just can't fathom spending £4 on a really well fermented sourdough.
And to make the healthiest bread in the world, it's a lot more than that, because of you know, the amount of ingredients that you put in it. But if you make it at home, you can make it a lot less expensive. If you start making it commercially, obviously then all the costs go on commercially. But I do share it, just interestingly, if anyone's listening to this, I do share it all. It's all on sourdough.co.uk. And I could chat and chat about that, but I'm here to ask what functional medicine. So I'm going to go back to you.
Sorry, exactly.
No, I can always talk about bread. Tell me that. It's all about prevention. So I guess my last kind of questions for you functionally are, what are your top tips for someone, especially, I mean, I know it sounds awful, I'm going to be a bit self-centered here, but women, menopause, that kind of age, and from a functional medicine perspective, what would, if your takeaways from functional medicine to any women that are listening? Actually, you know what? Maybe chuck in some stuff for men as well, because obviously you don't just do men, do you? But
no,
you specialize in women, but men as well. I think there's a lot. Menopause is a real thing. I have a husband who is just a little older than me, and I'm watching him just as much as me. Just that. You know, dealing with the way things work differently. So come on, hit us with
I know it's so hard to kind of pin down, but I think there's pillars, aren't there, in our life. But I think A really key one that we could, actually is so fascinating to read more about and hear more about is circadian rhythm. And that for women, particularly with their hormones. And Flora, actually, my colleague at Peach, has just done a, she did a podcast with a lady, Menopositive, it's called. It's a great podcast, so I recommend looking that up. But she also talked about a lot with circadian rhythm. And actually, you know, even to the point where we, every single cell in our body is working on this circadian clock. And if you're, if we are working in a life where we're suddenly, okay, one day we're waking up at 9 o'clock because we've had a rubbish night's sleep. The next day we'll have to get up at 6:30 because we've got to go and do this, this, and that. And your body doesn't know where it is, you know, and.
Just fascinating that you just said that. Even your gut microbiome has been shown, even your microbes, you have their own circadian rhythm. They've got their own little, you know, this is why I do it this time of day.
Yeah. And that's why we in clinic, we're kind of trying to slowly ask people to try, if it's needed, to try and just keep a general rough time of morning when they're getting up, keep it kind of as similar as possible. And then don't fight at the end of the day when you need to go to bed. Try not to fight it. And suddenly people really, their metabolism can change, their satiety hormones suddenly wake up, you know. It these things happen and their hormones just feel a lot happier. And so a big tip would be just reading a bit more about that and have a more understanding of that and just being aware, I think, is amazing. So circadian rhythm is one, and obviously that comes in with sleep, because I think if your circadian rhythm is there, you're going to be slowly, you'll get there, but your sleep should improve hugely. And sleep is such a massive great thing and impacts all. So yeah, just but we can get so over the top of worrying about we're not sleeping, and that's another whole conversation. You know, we need to really be careful with our mindset around sleep and just, you know, take it as it is. But circadian rhythm, that's going to be a really great thing. I think a really big thing actually for everything is mindful eating, and that looking after our upper gut. And that actually is why sourdough is such a great thing, because it's more chewy, the bread, and actually it makes you eat more slowly. Yeah. And that slow eating is game changing, because we can, if we're wolfing things down on the move, our digestion is shutting off. And that means our detoxification is also shutting off. And we then can't break down our fat. Our fat is absolutely vital for our brain function and our
go through that again. Tell us about the fat and the chewing and go on.
I guess really importantly, we need to just be thinking about food ideally about 15 minutes before it's coming into our
plate. Smelling food.
Exactly. We then want to try and eat mindfully, so we're not kind of, you know, you can be maybe moving around your kitchen possibly, but you want to be thinking about that food, thinking about chewing, and even, you know, engaging, being relaxed around a table with family, friends. Mm. It's a fantastic way to eat, because you're not stressed, and you are relaxed, and often I'm telling clients to breathe really deeply around when they're eating, because then you're kicking in that parasympathetic nervous system, which is that rest and digest.
Well, it's very interesting you should say about this, because one of the things that I don't want to go too personally into, because obviously, you know, my mum might be listening to this and she's going to be cross if I tell you, but at my parents' house, especially growing up, one of the things that I had never really taken into consideration, aside from having, you know, emotional dysregulation as a teenager, I think I was a bit of a nightmare. There were strip lights in my parents' kitchen, three of them. And once I started to understand and actually my genetics are also in line with that neurodiversity and all the MTHFR, COMT, and all of those kind of like things that you often see, But those strip lights, coupled with, you know, all of the rest of things that were going on, and my mum's quite, she's an Italian chef, and she could be quite Mamma Mia in the kitchen. I mean, she doesn't speak with an Italian accent. You've probably met Mum actually, but she's still got all the attitude. You know, you don't mess my mother around at the table, because especially as Tid, she's trying to get three kids on the table. There'd be the dogs and the horses and the whatever was going on. And I remember always feeling a high level of anxiety at the kitchen table, especially around, you know, this was the time when I would be criticised for eating too much because I'm quite greedy, or criticised for not eating what she thought I should be eating because I would leave the greens or whatever it was that I do. You know, my mother wanted me to eat my vegetables. And it's really interesting, you should say, slow down your eating, because one of the most difficult things I've had to do, and I'm not sure I really succeeded yet, Venetia, even though I eat sourdoughs, probably what slows me down is I have to chew it. Because if I didn't have to chew it, I would inhale my food. Mm-hmm. I would simply go, and it would be gone. and I appreciate good taste and I love it, but I gollop my food down like a Labrador sometimes. And I have to think, oh my gosh, Vanessa, you teach this. For goodness sakes, practice what you teach. But actually it changes your cortisol's up. So all of that is functional medicine, isn't it?
Oh, it's a functional approach. And if you can't, if that upper gut isn't working correct, then that as I said, the liver isn't able to kind of push out the bile, but the enzymes aren't being produced, but because the stomach acid isn't there enough to prod everything. But then if you're not doing that correctly, your bigger particles of food are landing in your lower gut, and that changes the environment, that habitat in the lower gut, and it completely negates it. You know, you get a real imbalance in bacteria when you aren't doing this correctly at the top. So it's actually, if you can get this right and do it as well as you can with that mindfulness and all slowing eating and all the rest, you're creating a lot more of a healthier environment and habitat for your gut microbes in your
cell. So we call this sequenced eating, and we actually, I'm going to make you laugh. People say, well, I've come here to learn to make bread, and actually, functionally, it's about how to learn to bake, eat, and share bread. And one of the weird things, especially on the retreat, I actually teach people, it's going to make you laugh, is literally how to eat bread. I mean, obviously, I don't teach people to inhale their bread, but I actually teach people how to slow down. And I have to, I have to consciously do that every meal time, Venetia. So you think that this is a good thing, this is one of your top tips for anyone who's at this stage in life, is to make a conscious connection to their food.
Yeah, I mean, economically, it's terrible for me, because I might start a session at the beginning of our journey and say, just do that, and that might have cured their gut issues. And, you know, that may be the game-changing piece in a journey with someone, which is just great, you know. If that is, it's just great. But it's just, even if we don't, for preventative health, it's a great thing to think about.
So my last question, Venetia, is about how you feel. How do you feel when someone comes back to you and says, I don't need you anymore, I'm good?
Oh, it's great. I had it yesterday and it was fantastic. Yeah, it's lovely. And I think there's people, my training is to get people's health goals. What do they really want? You know, we may not get there. We're very honest. We can't guarantee anything, like anything in life. You know, nothing is guaranteed. But
it takes time sometimes, doesn't it? Yeah,
it does. And often we've got people at Peach, we do encourage a sort of membership, but it's not, there's no commitment, you know. We can cancel it at any time. You could just have one appointment and then...
So before we head off, just let people know about your membership, because obviously this is something that's launched, it's quite cool.
It is.
And you know, something that is very supportive. And what I love, so this sounds really strange. I talk to a lot of people. I talk to a lot of nutritionists and a lot of people. One of the things about this sort of thing is that unless somebody understands the BOM protocol, they will contradict what we do. And then someone will come away and they say, oh, I went to nutritionists. They said, no bread whatsoever in any way, shape or form, no gluten. And I'm not to speak to you ever again because you're a bad person teaching me to bake. I'm like, okay. So one of the reasons that I love sending people over is that we're going to need more support nutritionally than just do the bread. One of the reasons I love this is because when you're working with people, you're like, oh, I know the kind of big poops bread you're making, and I know how broken down it is. I know the diversity, and you're actually on board with it. So you'll actually work with the healthiest bread in the world with your clients. So tell me about this membership, because that is something I would like to tell my people about, because I can tell you now, none of my lot want to give up gluten. They'd rather chew their own arm off.
The problem is that we sort of have to do that because we don't think they'll be able to get access to some bread that you provide, and it depends, and often it's not, and often it's just let's just give it a go to try, and it's moving away from the refined kind of thing. But I think, and we can help them with that. But it's great to know that you're there as well for them. I think with at Peach, we really need to do that digging due to our functional training. We need to do that digging, and that requires an initial assessment of about 1 hour and 15 minutes. And your students get a discount for that. And then we would then after that we then. Ideally, I think the optimum is to at least see a client for at least 2 or 3 times more than that. And it can be as frequent or less frequent as we wish. And that's for myself and the client to decide what they want and how best they're going to get out of this. Often, sometimes it's really great to see someone once a week for a month. And then we've actually really dug into the issues, and they can then maybe flee away on their own, and they're happy.
And so they get a club membership with this, where they can come back and just keep going without it
Yeah,
costing
I
them
mean,
so
it just
much.
means that there's commitment on both sides, and we're on a journey. And they get access to this in a great app that Flora and her and Tom, a co-founder, created, which is fantastic. It's got a pantry. It's got your flour on the pantry. All of that. It's got a recipe area, which is really easy but delicious recipes. Flora used to be an incredible chef, so we've got that real delight there too. And it's wonderful. There's a chat function directly with the practitioner, so really easy to communicate. And
Fantastic.
it's all about our vision and our goals. Within the Peach is compassion. And we're not there to.
I mean, I'm going to say that I know people I've sent to you, and that is, I would say that you're over and above with your compassion and the way that you, it's not just the way that you nourish people, it's the way you make them feel, Phoenicia. I think it's amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think that's really important though, because often it's been a hard journey for them already, and we don't want to make it harder. We need to make change, really small changes that are really realistic for somebody, and we need to really think around the box and what is the best thing for you as a person. And is it me? It might not be. Peach may not be the right place, and we would be very honest about that. And we obviously have a lot of connections with other health professionals in other specialisms, and we're not. It is all about that, and that's very important in the world of nutritional therapy that we're in it together, particularly with the medical, who we greatly respect, and they are there for a reason, and but we hopefully are there to support them. And
Fantastic.
I'm delighted, and definitely your students get a discount on that initial. So yeah.
That's lovely. Phoenicia, I think we're out of time, but I think we managed to
Oh.
actually have the shortest, it's actually relatively short for you and I. So thank you very
Oh, well,
much for explaining functional medicine
no,
and
I hope
functional
it was clear. There's
approach.
probably loads we haven't discussed, but you could go on, couldn't you?
Right, that's fantastic. So, for anyone who is listening, you can follow Peach on Instagram, and you can also follow Peach Health, and also you can follow Venetia on Instagram, and we'll be posting a little bit about this on Instagram later, I think next week. And feel free to get in touch with Venetia, and if you can't get hold of Venetia, I will put you in contact with Venetia. So, and Peach Health, thank you very, very much, Venetia.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
Bye.
bye.
If you enjoyed listening to that podcast as much as I enjoyed chatting with my guests, then you might like to find out a little bit more about what I do. Well, I teach courses both online and in person at thesourdoughschool.com. I also write regularly for sourdough.co.uk, and I have a couple of Instagram accounts that you might like to follow: Sourdough School, Sourdough Club. Oh, and I have a personal one, Vanessa Kimball. I really do love to hear people's thoughts and feedback about, well, the books I write, the podcast, the features, or if you have any questions, don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you for listening.